Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Need Some Introduction. We have a lot of new listeners, Sona, so I want to kind of reintroduce
Yay!
The show. Welcome, everybody. This show began, by the way, during the pandemic, just as a way to have conversations with my friends. The only one who decided to hang around was Sona.
Well, we go back the furthest, so that makes sense, right?
And mostly we break down TV shows and I give recommendations and Sona does as well. And we just talk about what we've been watching. And I also drop in some movie reviews, some music reviews, occasionally, very occasionally. It used to be mostly music. Now it's mostly TV shows. We just wrapped up this weekend, The Peripheral, another show we were covering on Amazon Prime, a show I really did not like that much, to be honest with you. If you had listened to that series and you do like science fiction shows, we will be starting in January covering a show called The Last of Us, the next big prestige HBO TV series from the creators of the excellent miniseries Chernobyl. This is a science fiction show with Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. Both of them actually had small roles on, but memorable roles on the Game of Thrones TV series. And working together here on this video game adaptation based on really one of the best, most well-regarded video games of all times. And very curious to see how this will adapt to our television screens. And that's coming in January. But in the meantime, we will obviously be wrapping up The White Lotus, which we'll be discussing here. We'll be continuing to discuss another excellent show on FX, Fleischman is in Trouble. And throughout the rest of this month, also talking about Glass Onion. By the way, I saw the Knives Out sequel, Glass Onion, Sona. And
you went to the movie theater? Wow.
Isn't that crazy? And when it comes out on Netflix in a couple of weeks, maybe we have that conversation at that point. A full spoiler review, I think. And also, of course, the Avatar sequel is coming out, and I'll probably be seeing that in a movie theater, Sona, believe it or not, in a movie theater.
Wow.
So plenty of content between now and then, and we'll talk about what show Sona and I will be covering week to week after we get to the end of Fleischman is in Trouble. But in the near term, a couple more episodes of White Lotus, and then I believe four more episodes of Fleischman is in Trouble on Hulu and FX. Before we get to all that, Sona, I did want to mention that usually December is like this dead spot for new series coming out. Last year, I mean, we had such a dead spot, we really didn't even have content for the podcast, you know, throughout December and January, actually. This year, we have a whole bunch of shows that came out just this weekend, and I wanted to talk about a couple of them with you that you might be interested in,
sure.
And maybe our listeners might be interested in. The first one, the one I'd recommend the most, is Slow Horses, which is available on Apple TV Plus, which I did cover briefly, series one here on the podcast, has come back for season two. So within a single calendar year, this show has come back. And this is about a bunch of rejects from MI5, the spies in the UK, who are demoted to work at Slough House, which is an office. Just maybe they become paper pushers for MI5, kind of an embarrassment within the organization. And they basically are put into this lower tier of spydom for the purposes of basically either reforming them or getting them to be so embarrassed by their situation that they quit MI5 completely. Their leader is Gary Oldman. Now, this is based on a very popular series of novels. And as a matter of fact, Apple TV Plus has committed to, along with the BBC producing, have committed to at least four seasons of this. And I think there's five or six novels. And each season correlates to one of these books. What I would say is season two just began this week. I thought that season one, despite all the praise it got, was a little bit of a slow burn. But what I was really surprised to see when I started season two was how much I loved these misfits. As soon as they showed up on screen again, I was like, oh man, what have they been up to?
Mm-hmm. You know?
So it was really charming to start over again. The show is also very funny in a very dark way, even though the topics they're dealing with are pretty grim stuff. But once again, these kind of misfits bumbling along. In season one, for example, there's a terrorist assassination attempt that the MI5 proper, the real spies, have completely screwed up. And they're like, we need a scapegoat to cover up our screw up. And they basically try to frame the Slough House misfits. And it's really entertaining because you have these people who admittedly are not the best spies openly, you know, they admit this to themselves, have to A, solve this crime, and B, avoid the authorities because everybody's kind of out for them, given the fact that their own organization is trying to frame them for this crime. So they have no friends inside the organization itself. That sounds entertaining. And it really is very entertaining. And season two is off to a relatively slow start, I would say. Season one really got off to a bang and then kind of slowed down in the middle. Season two, the first two episodes dropped this weekend, a little bit slow, But like I said, I was really shocked to just see all these people again and kind of catch up to where they are now. Some of them are in relationships again with each other, even seeing where they're all at and being like, oh, wow, I really love these guys. So I do recommend that the most. And I think I will probably be watching it throughout. There's only 6 episodes, so a pretty short amount of time to watch for anybody who wants to watch that. And the other thing I would recommend, maybe you might be interested in this, Sona, so, and maybe audiences as well. There's a new series on Amazon Prime called Three Pines, and it is a French-Canadian production starring Alfred Molina. And this is also based on a series of books. And why I think people might want to watch this, there's only 8 episodes. They drop 2 episodes per week for 4 weeks, just up until the holidays. It takes place during Christmas time. So that's kind of a little tie-in, potentially. And each 2 episode cycle of this is a single novel. So basically the murder is committed and resolved. It's almost like watching a long episode of Murder, She Wrote. So I think it's a fun idea. What I would say for the show, it's very uneven. Alfred Molina is great. It's the main reason to stick around. I think a lot of the cast is not great. These people are not people I recognize. They're probably TV actors from this part of Canada. And right. It's very uneven and also feels a little cheap. Like, I feel like some of the performances are that everything feels a little rushed. Like maybe they didn't have enough time to rehearse or to work out the kinks in these scenes. And Molina, of course, rises above it because he's just so good. But everybody else, maybe not so much. So it does feel a little cheap. And this is one that I'm not as enthusiastic about. What I would say that's interesting about it is in the background of all these individual murders, there is an overriding story about all these Indigenous women that have disappeared. So they're addressing this issue, which we've talked about here previously.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it feels so shoehorned in, it doesn't feel really satisfying. But it is kind of developing in the background. So I do wonder if like these little murders are kind of building up to a larger conspiracy and we don't know about it. But I'd say, like, for example, in this first episode, it is very much quirky people in this small town. All these murders keep happening in this small town, apparently. He's been demoted because of something he's done to go work during the holidays. It's kind of almost like a punishment for him. And why are all these people dying in this small town all of a sudden? But in this specific case, there's this woman, she's an author, she's kind of a terrible person. And it's really like a Murder, She Wrote type episode where it's
sounds, you know, like
she,
it.
She dies in what looks to be an accident, but then he suspects it's actually a murder. And by the end of episode 1, you're like, everybody in town had a reason to kill this woman. And then you have to and you have to figure out who it was. So it's that kind of show. It's very much like a murder of the week, although it is a murder of the week, even though it's 2 episodes because they drop 2 at a time. You know, it's a bite-sized mystery. I think it's pretty easy watch, uneven. But I'm somewhat curious about this. I probably will stick with it. Yeah, and that's what I've been watching. Has anything you been watching?
One thing that I watched recently, which I had mentioned to you over text, was the 3rd and final season of Dead to Me.
Oh, yeah.
With Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini. Mm-hmm. Is her name Linda? Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Which was absolutely amazing to me. I was very unprepared because the previous 2 seasons, while they are dark at times and cover some very serious themes, it's more like a dark comedy. This is still a dark comedy, but they face those darker themes really head on. And there is a lot going on about grief and grieving. And there's a cancer storyline. And I have to say, like, I was not prepared for the emotional journey that this show took me on. And I spent probably a good 2 or 3 episodes of it just silently crying while watching it.
Okay.
But in a good way, if that makes sense. I mean, it was really beautifully done. It had a lot to say about grieving, about female friendships, about the meaning of life. Really beautiful with an uplifting ending, but to me, very much a departure from the feel of the first 2 seasons. And I think also, I don't know if everyone keeps up with Christina Applegate the way I do, but she recently was diagnosed with MS. And so I think there was a lot going unsaid about what she's dealing with. And you could see that many of the scenes were set up in a way that she didn't have to be standing up unsupported. All around, it was really lovely. And I'm really happy I watched it. But also, I binge watched this in a single day. I was very unprepared for how moving it was. Actually,
Yeah, I've heard very good things about this season, even though it kind of goes in a different direction. And I think there's, like you said, there's kind of a meta relationship we have with Christina Applegate, especially in our...
Yes, absolutely.
Grew up watching her on Married with Children. And, you know, I've seen her evolve throughout her career through Anchorman and, you know, her comedy stints with that whole cater of folks. And now, you know, being a star in and of herself, and now finding out about this diagnosis, of course, I'm sure there's some aspect of that that ties into your appreciation of the show also.
That's for sure.
I've seen season one. I never watched season two because I was kind of turned off by where season one ended. And anyway, I think I asked you this already, but would it be possible that I skip season two and go straight to three? Would that work or no?
I think it would. I have to say, when season three started, I was kind of just like, why did they not do a previously on? Because yeah. I cannot remember what happened last year.
That was
year.
A while
Things
ago, right?
It was a while ago. I'm not sure how much time they had off, but I do think it was longer than the typical amount of time.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a lot of things felt, wait, that's vaguely familiar. Yes, there was something with this wooden bird. But I mean, some scenes would have been very, very helpful in catching me up to speed. But all of that fell away very quickly because that really isn't the focus of the third season at all. While they do tie everything up nicely, that plot is not the point anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that as well, that it's kind of not in the same genre even.
Yeah, both the actresses just do incredible, incredible work with some really sensitive subject matter, I think. I don't know what it's like to go through a cancer diagnosis, but I have been a close family member of someone who has struggled with a cancer diagnosis, a terminal cancer diagnosis. But it really, I think, brings back those memories. I mean, it almost felt like this should have come with a trigger warning, to be honest. But it captures a lot of very universal human emotions really beautifully.
So a warning for any people out there who are dealing with these type of issues within their family.
Yeah.
I think that there is some value in being warned that the content is there.
Yeah, it's just the mental preparation,
sure,
you know,
exactly.
of the journey that I would be on.
Exactly. Just warning you that it's coming, right? So, Sona, before we get into this extremely tantalizing episode of The White Lotus that we just watched.
Yes.
Called Abductions, of all things. We did want to put a bow on some of the things we started talking about last week. Just to kind of wrap that up, full disclosure, we were kind of in a rush last week to finish recording our episode.
And so much happened.
Yes. And it was packed with stuff, as is this week, I guess. But anyway, I'll make that sound natural. If it's a boring episode, I'll just cut all that stuff out. So yeah, so let's just wrap up a couple of things we brought up just at the very end of last week's episode. First of all, we actually got an email addressing maybe one of the most contentious things about the show based on social media reaction, which is the photograph that Daphne shows to Harper. This indicates that that child was fathered by somebody else. And I can understand the coloring, right? Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yes. This was more confusing than I felt it should be.
I agree.
And I think this is something that they will not revisit.
They
so
will
I
not.
Don't
I
think
agree.
We're going to get a conclusive answer.
Right.
So
right.
I wish it had been a little bit less confusing.
Yep. Yep. Regardless of whether there is indication here that she had this affair with somebody else, which I honestly still do not think, not that she's not having an affair, but that is her older child. So I can't imagine her getting into this relationship with Cam and cheating on him, getting pregnant by somebody else so early in the marriage is what I would say. Mm-hmm. I assume they've been married within, you know, 10 years and the child is 5 or 6
right.
years old.
That
so it's
sounds
pretty,
right. Yeah.
Pretty early in the relationship, it seems like. So I do think that it's kind of a red herring that the child is blonde haired, blue eyed. And I think you're right, Sona. I don't think we're going to have a confirmation of that before the end of the series. I think more importantly was the fact that she was indicating by showing Harper the picture of the kids that this is what's really at stake for her. And that's really why she puts up with everything else. And also, I think that only in me revisiting that scene during the editing process of the podcast did I notice kind of a little antagonism, a little anger when Daphne talks to Harper and says, get yourself a trainer. And I felt like she was telling Harper that she knew, based on the earlier interaction, that Cam is now interested in her sexually. And we saw her flirting openly with Cam in that episode also. And I do wonder if there's another aspect to that scene where she is brushing Harper back, saying, go find yourself another outlet for your sexual frustration, not my husband. Is that how you read that at all?
I did not get a chance to go back and watch it, but I certainly could see that. Daphne is much more shrewd than she portrays herself to be.
Yeah.
And I think that that comes across at certain moments. And regardless of the confusion with this whole thing with the blonde hair and the blue eyes,
yeah,
overall, if I have to pick a side, I'm going to say the hypothetical trainer is not the father of her kids. Even putting all of this aside, I think because Daphne would not let Harper have information that could blow up her marriage. And regardless of what goes on between Daphne and Cameron that everyone chooses to look the other way for, I do not think a paternity scandal would fall in the category of things that people are going to pretend aren't happening. I think right. That is something that could actually be marriage ending for right. Daphne and Cameron. I don't think she's going to give this woman that she just met a week ago, not even, and she already says that she has problems with her friendships with women for various reasons. I think she's way too smart to give that valuable information to an almost stranger. For that reason alone, I don't think that the trainer is the father of the kids. Although, again, very weird verbal ambiguities yeah. in that yeah. whole conversation.
right.
And I do think, because I have come to believe that she is smarter than she wants to let on to people, that she does see something is going on here and she right. doesn't like it.
Right.
She sees that Harper is trying to find an ally in this idea of like, oh, bad things happened while we were gone and we have to confront that. I think she's saying like, don't look at me as your ally in that, because I have built this lovely life for myself and I am not about to blow it up over one night in Sicily.
Right, right. I agree with all of that. And I'm not sure if we're going to get a concrete answer there.
I have a feeling that that conversation happened at a point in time and it will not be revisited.
Yeah, I agree.
There's no time.
Yeah, we have two episodes left. To Mike White's credit in the White Lotus, I feel like this is an even more tightly scripted version of the show versus last yes. season. So I just feel like everything totally is agree. Just accelerating and tying together. And totally I do not agree. Expect we're going to be breathless by the end yes. of the show. Right. So it's left out there, maybe with some ambiguity intentionally, and that's it. We're done.
So, yep. Mm-hmm.
As are a lot of things on the show, to their yes. credit. I mean, I think he has an answer, but he's not necessarily going to spoon feed it to us.
Right.
All right, so this episode is called Abductions with an S.
Mm-hmm.
We have a question for you, because we definitely have one abduction. I'm curious as to what you think the next or multiple abductions could possibly be.
Well, the obvious one is Lucia. Right?
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then Portia.
Yes, good point. Yes.
Right? That was the one that occurred to me. I guess in a larger scheme, Tanya.
Mm-hmm. True. Yes, that's right, because she's kind of been separated from the group.
Okay. Anybody else?
I was actually stuck on even beyond Lucia, because, we actually have it called an abduction, although let's talk about what we think is actually going on there, obviously, when we get to it. But I think you make a good point. I couldn't think about what the other one was, unless they're, he's talking more metaphorically. Mike White, again, writing and directing all of these episodes. But you make a really good point that Tanya is like in the lap of luxury right now, but has she been abducted? And similarly, to a lesser extent, is Portia in the same situation where she's basically trapped with this person, cannot do what she wants to do. And of course, it's all manipulated by her pleasures in a way, although I think she's getting a little tired of this guy at this point.
Oh, I think she clearly reached her limit.
Yeah.
And, is kind of stuck, right? Well, yep. I don't know how mm-hmm. comfortable she would be driving in Europe, but right, or in right. Italy, but kind of stuck. And Tanya, could she Uber. Leave if she wanted Uber. To? She might not yeah. know she's been abducted. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's part of the...
But she's going to need a boat to get out of that place, I think.
Good,
so,
good point. Well, I actually said call an Uber, but...
Portia did drive away, right? So there yes. is... There is
oh,
a,
good point.
A, yep. You could leave by yes. car. I yeah. think it might be a very indirect way to get back to the hotel that way. But yeah. you could at least leave.
So we begin the episode. We see Albie and Lucia. This is not the first episode we've seen them. Early in the morning, having sex. He's getting his full, I guess he did pay for one day, but he's getting his full 24 hours in. Ethan and Harper decidedly are not having sex.
Oh, boy.
As usual for them as well. But this is very uncomfortable. Harper tries to have a very honest conversation with him, saying, regardless of anything else that's going on, regardless of whether you slept with these prostitutes or not, she basically says, you're not attracted to me anymore. She asks him directly, is that the case? To which he answers, I love you. And she says, that's so depressing.
Yes.
And then, of course, he says, that's depressing. It's depressing when I say I love you. And what can she say to that? So she basically says, yes, I love you too. But of course, that is not. She wants to be desired. She doesn't want to just be loved.
And she has that great line, we're too young to be this old.
Yes, a great
and
line.
And she's right.
Yeah, true, true. They're like in their 20s, right?
You know, I felt like more of a mid-30s kind of feeling from maybe them. Maybe 30s,
yeah.
But
yeah, I was thinking late 20s because I still remember her from Parks and Recreation. But yeah, she's got to be in her 30s at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the age to be settled into comfortable companionship yet.
Right.
I mean, maybe if you've been dating since high school, but otherwise, you know, assuming the typical course of relationships for people, this is too young to be acting this old. I agree.
And they've probably only been together, I would assume, for a few years. So it's definitely
that's what I'm thinking. So there should be more passion and spark still than.
Yeah. Absolutely. Meanwhile, out at the palazzo, we have Tanya and Portia. They have breakfast together. Tanya has a strange conversation with Tanya. She does drop some hints about, she's like, I'm pretty sure.
Are they hints or are they literal?
Well, she says some literal things, but she's kind of skirting the topic, just specifically saying things like, I'm pretty sure they're not related. But she doesn't come right out and give her direct warnings, say, or how was she like me when she was younger?
And, well, and also the characteristics she's naming aren't very flattering, right? I can't remember exactly what it was, but like, you're aimless.
Yes.
You have no idea what you want. You know, you're shallow. I can't remember the exact words, but they were not things that when someone says, you remind me of myself when I was young.
Right. Not in a positive way. Exactly.
You know, yeah, not in a positive way. She's not wrong, though, by the way. She's not wrong.
Right. And that's what I was going to actually call out. Portia does a lot of eye rolling here. And then Tanya says this weird metaphor that she was a little doll when she was younger and she was always waiting for someone to pick her up and play with her. Portia's still not getting it. And she goes, what are you trying to say, Tanya? Which Tanya just says, Portia, get your shit together. At this moment, it seems like Portia is not giving her too much credit to these warnings. But by the end of the day, she seems to, you know, start asking a lot of questions of Jack and starting to worry, I think, overtly that something's going on here.
Yeah. And this is also something about Jennifer Coolidge's character and her mannerisms, just the whole Jennifer Coolidge thing that she does. Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard to know how smart is this person supposed to be,
right?
Because they do things that seem very immature and very clueless. But then at the same time, every now and then she does something that makes me think like, no, she knows what's going on here. Yes, you can be born into a super wealthy situation, but there are enough people out there that have squandered that. I mean, she's keeping it going somehow, and she, you know, has a prenup. And so it's kind of hard to know how sharp is Tanya and how much credit should we be giving her. But in this particular conversation, it seems like she is on it. Like she, she is very perceptive in this conversation.
A couple of things I would say to that is sometimes people can be perceptive when they look outwards and not look inwards in the same way. Mm. Another thing I would say is, as far as paralleling characters here, I think about Daphne also, right? Where Daphne is much more on it than she presents because she wants to play that role so much. And I think Tanya maybe is an older version of that, where she's still trying to act a certain way. And she still also wants the world to be a certain way. So she will play act. But maybe deep down inside, she's not so naive about what's going on.
Mm.
It's like kind of the way she reacted to seeing Greg out on that patio. You could play it off as Greg is trying to gaslight her, going, you're thinking too much into this. I'll just be gone for a couple of days. Come on. But she is definitely, she knows what's happening, right? Even though he's trying to play it off. So I do think that there's some aspect of that to her character. Lucia goes to the front desk and she's looking for that envelope. Where's her 1300 euros? And of course it's not there because Cam is not going to pay her. But she runs into Ethan, who is coming back from his run. And he goes, oh, I didn't realize. And to him, he's just like, oh, I can get you that money. Don't worry about it. Because you know, he's just more of an honorable person. And to him, I'm sure the $1,300 isn't a big deal. So 1,300 euros isn't a big deal. He can grab it and take care of this situation. But more importantly is that Harper sees him talking to them. She starts being like, come on. And of course, that's the other thing. It's not only that these are some kind of circumstances that she's running into. Ethan has been overtly lying, if you want to read it one way, or just simply not telling her what's going on. And every time he tells her a different version of the truth, he is telling her more of the truth. But then he's been so shady up until now, she doesn't have much confidence in anything he tells her.
He wants way too much credit for how he's acting here. I mean, he's lucky that she is not, that she hasn't just up and left, honestly. Right. Yeah. You know, this is like a real failure to understand the situation on Ethan's part.
Yes. And I think to the credit of the writing of the show, it's not like ridiculous, like he is a Cam type personality who's behaving this way. Any read we can have on this character and from his backstory, he probably is not the most socially adept person. He is now just thinking he's doing the right thing. He's like very calculated in what he thinks he's doing without realizing like how it's in some ways even worse. What he's doing is even worse than just overtly lying and then just fessing up at the end, right?
Yes.
It's Valentina's birthday today and she wants to go out for drinks with Isabella. And that's about all for now. We'll get back to that because that's obviously going to pay off, but we'll wait almost to the end of the episode to get back around to Valentina. Back at the Palazzo, Jack, as we hinted at earlier, has the keys to the car. Of course, has conveniently, not so conveniently, been given the keys to this car. And they are going to go out on the town, but they'll be back in time for the party. Wink, wink.
And he has his uncle's credit card to,
He's got the credit card.
To assuage any fears that they're going to have to dine and dash again. And I also did love Tanya's observation of like, aren't you near a dollar?
Yes.
Why would you do this?
And that's very intentional, by the way. I want to go back to that. When Portia is romanticizing the night before, she says, it was so exciting. We almost got arrested. Mm-hmm. And when the reality is that if they had been chased down and cornered for the $1 meal that they died and dashed on, I mean, even if a police officer, they would just be like, pay him the dollar. All right, asshole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He would not go to jail. He did not step out on a $3,000 liquor bill. Meanwhile, the DeRossis are on a quest to find their local family. They have this fantasy based on another trip that another family of a friend of theirs, they went to and reconnected with their roots in Sicily, took pictures with the local family. There's definitely an overt reference to not only women, but you think about the idea of like the motherland and this idea of like returning home, returning to your mother. It's not going to play out the way that they expected.
Listen, my perspective is skewed because I am a child of immigrants and so are you, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, I can't put myself in this situation, but looking at it as an outsider, I think, why would these people be happy to see you? Yes. Yep. Why would they care one way or the other? You're generations removed from the family they remember. I mean, they might be friendly enough. I mean, although in this case, we know what happens. I don't understand it. Maybe because I just can't wrap my head around that situation.
I'll speak from actual experience. My dad loves to do this, not going back multiple generations. We would literally be driving somewhere randomly. You may have even been with us on one of these trips. And we'll just drive down some streets. And my mom will be like, where are you going? And they're like, you know what? My cousin, two ice removed or something, lives down this street and I haven't seen him in 25 years, and just knock on the door.
Now's the time.
Yeah. Sometimes people will be there, sometimes they won't, or sometimes they moved. But every once in a while, you know, there's people there. And I think it really varies depending on these two different versions of what ends up happening here. Because sometimes they're like, oh yeah, I remember, good to see you. Like they had nothing else to do and they're very social people. And then the opposite happens too, right? Where it's just somebody who hasn't seen us and, you know, hasn't seen my dad since he was a kid. And they're kind of like, why do I care? Like just completely
Like, what are you doing here? You need something? Exactly. Yeah.
I don't have time to talk to you.
Right.
Like just very, very curt. Not everyone's going to be cool with it. Just because your friend had that experience with their relatives does not mean you're going to have that experience. Plus, they don't even have a translator, right? Which is a key point here. Albie actually brings Lucia with them as a translator. She gets abducted. There it is, the abduction by Alessio. Do you believe this? I think this is all a con job. What do you think?
First of all, just to go back to this one little detail.
Yeah.
They don't have a translator, but they do have a smartphone.
Yes.
And I don't think they are using that to their advantage here. Right. But that's just a little nitpick. Okay. In service of the storyline, they don't have a translator. Now, this Alessio situation, we talked about this briefly last week. It's hard for me to like suspend my own view of the practicalities because I'm noticing that when she is speaking with Alessio, they don't give any translations. Other times people are speaking Italian. They provide the translation.
Right.
So that to me is like making me suspicious And of course, you know, we discussed before, she just doesn't act like a woman who owes money to somebody else.
Right, right.
When we see her and she is not with Albie, she does not have that kind of stress.
Right.
Of like, somebody's looking for me, I need to get this money. Generally speaking, all of these people at the hotel, I mean, why wouldn't he just approach them directly and say, give me the money? I mean, isn't that kind of his job? There's a lot suspicious about it. I can't rule it out completely. It could be real, but I lean towards not.
The reason I'm so confident that it is indeed not what it appears to be, my hobby horse is this whole idea of, you know, that everybody's trying to pull a con on each other, and that would make sense thematically here. But more than that is that whole, I think it was back in episode 3, maybe, where Lucia was saying, oh, wait a second, I have a plan. I can get rich off of. And then we haven't seen her talk to Mia about this plan at all. However, we have seen all these weird little behaviors. So it's almost like, well, this is the plan, right? We're seeing the plan in action rather than having her sit down and explain her plan, especially with only one episode to go. And it started right away, like suddenly running into this Alessio, suddenly talking about a pimp that she'd never spoken about before. And as I mentioned, you know, the Rossi's minus Lucia now because she's been abducted, go and meet up with those older Italian women. I especially like how they're like, hey, can we go talk to your mother or grandmother? And the ladies on the porch are sort of like, sure. But they like have this little knowing smile like, this isn't going to go well. Yeah. And hilariously, the old woman, first of all, she puts like a curse on them. She seems to assume that they're shaking her down or something. She's like, how dare they come here and, you know, asking for money or something. And I'm like, I don't think they wanted any of your money, but regardless.
I just loved her waving the artichoke. I thought that was hysterical. Oh yes,
I'll throw this artichoke at you.
Weapon of choice, an artichoke.
And honestly, this might be the only funny sequence in this entire episode, which is pretty grim stuff, especially as we get to the end. We see that Harper, Ethan, Cam, and Daphne have headed to the beach. Daphne books herself for a massage. She's supposed to go with Harper, but there's only one appointment open, so she takes it. And by the time she gets back, she mentions that she had gotten massaged by a muscular Timothy Chalamet person, who may have screwed up her back, though, so by the end of it. So maybe not the best masseuse. And I think she's just saying that, obviously, to try to get Cam jealous. Oh, before we talk about this scene, I did want to go back to something we discussed in last week's episode as to whether Daphne is blind to what Cam's doing or is not really bothered by what Cam is doing. Their interaction alone, right? So there's no one there to see the performance that morning. She says, Harper seems pretty convinced that you guys got into some trouble here. And then Cam tries to divert it and says, oh yeah, what were you doing in that in town? And then turns it into like a flirting session. And I did think this is very important because even in our conversations, we've talked about how Daphne is not only aware of what Cam does, but is kind of okay with it. And you kind of mentioned that this is, you know, they have a successful relationship, which I think they do, but that she is more of a peer in what's happening. And based on some of the interactions the past couple of weeks, I do feel like she is probably more uncomfortable with this. And she just tries to play her part.
I don't think it's her ideal.
Right, right.
This isn't what she wanted for herself, but I think she's done the math of what she's getting versus what she's giving up. And she's decided that she's still on the winning side of it.
Especially, and you know, it goes back to the final moments of last week, especially with the kids, right? Like, what is she going to do now? She's not going to walk away and disrupt the situation. She knew who he was when she married him.
Yeah. And I think the Harper situation is making it harder for her to do her usual thing where she just looks the other way and everybody goes about their way. You know, she's maybe feeling a little bit more of an obligation to herself to have this tough conversation, but she doesn't want to have the conversation, which is the reason I think that when Cam kind of turns it into something playful, she goes with it, right?
Right, which is what she normally does.
Yeah, because she doesn't really want to know the answer. And I will say in my life, I have found it is very true. Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answers to.
True, true.
I'm not saying it's the healthiest way, but you will spare yourself a lot of misery if you don't ask questions you don't want to know the answers to. Certain things you'll be confronted with whether you like it or not. So why go looking for trouble?
And meanwhile, the remainder, the trio on the beach, things start getting more and more stressed out here. Ethan actually goes for a swim to burn off some steam.
I love seeing him uncomfortable. He deserves it. Yes. He deserves every single second of discomfort he's feeling.
And apparently this is like what he does, right? He like burns off his energy by exercising. Mm-hmm. He's a very adept swimmer. I guess this actor is also. And and when he comes back, they're gone. And he goes and tracks them down in the hotel room. And I do have a question for you. What you think? What happened in the hotel room? He gets to the hotel room. They've both gone back to their separate rooms, supposedly. He gets to the door, tries to open it. The door has the lock on it from the inside. Mm-hmm. He starts pounding on the door. And then she opens it and she's like, calm down. What's wrong with you? Now, how do you read all this? This is the part that I think is most ambiguous here, because obviously something could have happened with Cam. She could have put the latch on the door intentionally to set the situation up so that she could get him pissed off, because she's pissed off. She's trying to get him pissed off as well. Or it could just be a coincidence. You know, maybe she just latched the door. You know, you go to your hotel room, you latch the door just in case.
I like how they left it ambiguous. If I have to pick a side, I don't think anything happened, largely because I think Harper, as much as I am fond of her, she has this very black and white sense of morality.
Right.
She's up on her high horse, and I don't think she would do anything in this moment that would make her a hypocrite.
Right.
I think just for the sake of like, I am better than you, she would not do it. I think she loves that he's uncomfortable, though.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
But isn't that even more enjoyable when he's uncomfortable and there's nothing to be uncomfortable about?
Yes.
But you're just playing that kind of mind game with him, I think is actually even more fun than if you actually are doing something that would be wrong. So for that reason, I think nothing happened. Logistically speaking, I also think it was strange that the connecting room door was ajar.
Yes.
But every time that I have stayed in hotel rooms that are connecting, both those doors have to be open to go back and forth.
Right.
So, I mean, they would have had to premeditate leaving both those doors open, or they originally each went to their own rooms and then Cameron knocked on the door and left his door open behind him, which could have happened.
Right.
But then having the foresight to bolt the door, I mean, I guess Cameron could have bolted the door. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of logistical issues with the whole situation.
Wow, you thought a lot about this, but
I really did.
But I think everything you say is true, because if he had suddenly been caught in the act and that she had opened that door, she couldn't open the door from the other side. So there are definitely couples where, you know, first thing in the morning when you're getting ready for breakfast, you pop the door open, you know, when you're on vacation with somebody, so that the kids can run back and forth, or you can talk through the door while you're getting ready. So that's not the kind of relationship they have. So that has not been happening.
Remember her horror at like when they were shown the rooms? Exactly. Let me show you how these connect. No, that's okay.
But there is, you know, the scenario you put out there that does kind of does make some sense, is that they did go into their separate rooms. They did go there. He's like, oh, I have to go grab something from my room too. He wouldn't have gone into her room. She wouldn't have been cool with that anyway. So he would have gone to his own room, knocked on the door, and then some seduction may have occurred. And maybe she would have closed the door. Much more likely is what you just mentioned. I can imagine Harper saying, I'm going to the room to get my hat. She knows how long he takes to swim. She probably knows he'll be back in 5 or 10 minutes. You know, he's probably not going to be out for 45 minutes. I mean, he's probably not that strong. He's not a professional swimmer. He's going to see them missing. He's going to overreact. She sent him the text message. And then she could just dilly-dally much longer, maybe an extra 5 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, you go to the bathroom while you're up there, you know.
And intentionally, but I mean intentionally making it longer because she wants him to show up.
As we're talking, I kind of want to go back to it and see the text message. Does it say like sent 5 minutes ago? Sent 15 minutes ago? Mm-hmm, like how much time has elapsed since she went to go get her hat?
You could probably see that. I got to see like a Reddit investigators. Speaking of Reddit investigation, we might need Reddit investigation for something that happens later in the episode. I'm sure it's already out there. I got to check it out. I agree with you, though. I think that Harper would probably be more uncomfortable keeping the affair under her hat.
Yeah, now she doesn't have the upper hand anymore. I'm being a better person.
Yep, exactly.
I did love his suspicion. The thing that really put him over, why are you so happy?
That is great, by the way. Yes, absolutely. She's like, you're in a good mood all of a sudden. Back with Parsha and Jack, moment just briefly. He is absolutely has no intention of going back to the Palazzo. Of course, this whole plan was to keep her away. He's getting drunker and drunker. She starts asking more and more questions. She's definitely getting uncomfortable. First, she just seems to be annoyed with him. Like, this guy is a little kid and it's annoying the hell out of me. And, almost picking a fight in the middle of the street. And all of this is A, maybe true to his personality. But I think much more importantly is that his job is to keep her away. And she's starting to suspect that that is the case.
But I love some of the conversations that they have here.
Oh, yes.
I think were really great and very pointed again about Portia and her life that she's living. When they're sitting and having the gelato and he's drinking a beer. And as my husband, who was watching this with me, pointed out, it looks like they're in the movie Luca. You know, she's saying, and this comes back to that first conversation with the two couples too, about what a horrible place the world is.
Yes.
And he's pointing out, but is it horrible for you? You know, like, really, what's so bad about your life, regardless of what's going on in the world?
Yep.
Look at, you know, all this world has to offer you, and you're talking about how terrible it is. And, you know, we find out, I think, you know, a little bit later that he has a little greater context for that kind of comment of how bad and dark life can be, and whether she has any idea about that or any, you know, even secondhand experience with that, never mind firsthand experience. You know, I don't have any great fondness for Portia, so I kind of liked this.
I have a couple of things that I think interesting here. First is that it turns out that despite Jack having this very positive, like, the world is great, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Turns out that he has a lot of darkness there, and we have to get into that definitely. Second of all, I do feel this is Mike White talking to people in general and saying, is it really that bad, everybody? Because this is my personal philosophy. I have had conversations with people talking about how absolutely horrible the world is. You know, you can't raise your kids anymore and blah, blah, blah. And there's this concept. There's actually a website where you can go to, and it's trying to give people some context for what's happening in the world. And it is the 50-year newspaper. So what it does is basically has headlines from today versus not yesterday, but versus 50 years ago. I think people need to have some context instead of doom scrolling on their phones and think about the fact that, yes, there are wars in the world right now, but much fewer than there were just a generation ago. That people die of diseases now, absolutely, but the pandemic killed a few million people. We used to have tens of millions of people dying whenever a disease, and this was the normal thing. You had worldwide wars, you had worldwide plagues, and tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people would die over a 20, 30 year period. Completely normal occurrence historically. We no longer live in that world. So the world is not such a dark place. Doesn't mean we should ignore the terrible things that occur out there, but we really need to have some context. Like he mentions, in like the best time. And by
ISIS is nothing compared to the Middle Ages, right?
Yes, exactly. And he mentions, here we are. And it's pretty darn good. And what does he say directly to her? If you can't be happy now, then you basically are incapable of being happy. Right. Not saying that you should force yourself to be happy, but this is the best version of your history that you could have.
Yes.
So do try to appreciate it. And especially her, like you said, it's not so bad. She does not live in a third world country. She is dissatisfied because she got everything she wanted. And it turned out to not be her what she expected.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that was all really interesting. Although some of it is resentment towards her, not appreciating what she has for sure, considering he has had so much less. But part of it, he's trying to tell himself in a way, well, things could be worse for him. They were worse, right?
Things were worse.
Matter how bad he feels at this moment, it could be much worse, right? And I think some of that is him talking to himself as well. Back at the palazzo, the party begins. Tanya is introduced to her supposed stud, Niccolo. Well, not supposed, I mean, I guess this actually happens by the end of the night. At first, I thought it was just a ruse to keep her engaged. Mm. He has also brought some party favors. He's brought some cocaine, which she hasn't done coke in a while, but boy, she takes to it pretty quickly. Back at the hotel, everybody, my God, people, get out in this town. Everybody is back at this damn restaurant yet again. Nobody goes anywhere else, except for Tanya, who was abducted. The DeRossi's, Bert especially, is very upset about the way things went that day. He mentions that there is no more homecomings for him, not from his wife, not from any woman, not from his motherland. And he decides, I'm not even that hungry. I'm going to drink my dinner in the bar. Meanwhile, also in the bar, Valentina, who discovered that Isabella was actually engaged now to Rocco, and that's why they were chatting all the time. And this, of course, is very disappointing for Valentina. She thought she would have potentially at least attempt a romantic engagement with Isabella. She decides to call it off and say, yeah, maybe we'll go tomorrow. Birthdays are just another day, which, you know, it's quite a reversal for her. Isabella is a little confused by all of this, but she ends up having a drink herself in the bar. And that's where Mia comes over and starts to talk to her and says, hey, you've never been with a woman at all, which is kind of sad when you think about that. She goes, but you know where all the empty rooms are and you have a master key. So, so Mia decides that she is going to give her a birthday present that she'll never forget. At the same very uncomfortable dinner, Ethan confronts Cam before the women arrive, saying that I know what you're doing. You've done this before. Of course, this is also very annoying what Cam is doing. Ethan has been gaslighting Harper. Oh, nothing happened. Nothing happened. Oh, well, maybe something happened, but you're still overreacting, etc. Now you have Cam and Ethan together. Cam has stolen his girlfriends in the past.
Right.
And now he's acting like, Ethan, why are you acting this way? Which is like, what are you talking about? Why are you acting this way? This is your pattern. What are you talking about?
At this point, I like everybody better than Ethan. So I'm almost ready to take Cam's side.
No, right? Exactly. True. I've turned
this
on
is what
too.
You signed up for. You knew who I was. Why are you surprised?
Yeah, I agree with that too. And that maybe my only sympathy is that Ethan thought that he would now have the upper hand in rubbing the money in Cam's face. And Cam somehow still has gotten the upper hand on him. So maybe that's his frustration. And then it gets very late. We see Albie and Lucia out under the moon, a beautiful shot on the beach. And she says that she needs money. The only way to solve this problem is with money. But this isn't your problem. But of course, this is all a scam.
Quite possible.
Do you think she's going to ask him for 100,000 euros to get out from under this, see if she gets the money so that she can buy her shop and get out of this lifestyle? Or do you think her plan is take me with you to America and I don't care. I'll just work. I'll figure out what this is and I'm going to marry this guy. What do you think?
Between the two options you've provided, it's take me with you to America. What do you think?
This is my own bias, but like a decade ago at this point, I went to Brazil on a trip with some people, some who were investors and business people, etc. There was someone who had inherited a large amount of money, and they had traveled to Brazil multiple times, and they had a quote-unquote girlfriend out in Brazil, and they would hook up whenever they were out there. On this particular trip, they weren't hooking up. She was hanging out with him the whole entire time. She was coming back to America with him, and they were going to get married.
And did that happen?
I don't know what happened beyond that point. Mm. She did fly back with him on that same trip, though. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a similar situation, right? Where she is.
Yeah, she exactly mentioned like wanting to go to LA. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there might be a heartfelt goodbye between Mia and Lucia. Maybe Mia becomes the Lucia. She stays behind as Lucia in the town. So speaking of parallel lives here, then we do have that conversation between Jack and
Portia
at the hotel. He's completely wasted, obviously cannot drive home. She says, well, let's get an Uber. You can't leave the car behind, yada, yada, yada. This is all obviously subterfuge. But we do hear him now having a very different version of, you don't appreciate how lucky you are, how bad things could be. I was in a dark hole. We don't know what this is, but apparently he was in a very, very bad situation. Quentin rescued him. But he says, so what if I have to do some things that I don't like sometimes?
And right.
I don't know if that means being part of this con. Maybe this isn't the first time he's been involved in one of these cons, because hey, Quentin has to come up with some way to keep himself afloat, right?
Right, because he's saying that there's not as much money as you think, right?
Oh, so yeah, he says that there's no more money. Yeah. He's spent it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had mentioned earlier that, oh, Quentin's always finding like some new older woman to hang out with them. So once again, is this all part of their pattern here? And is Jack's job to keep these other people occupied, or is he the stud for hire that needs to sleep with whoever that is? Like maybe he would normally be the Niccolo in this character situation. Mm-hmm. Or he might also be just talking about like when he says things that he doesn't want to do, maybe it's actually giving the sexual favors to Quentin that he requires as well as part of, you know, some stipulation.
Yeah, I definitely read it that way, at least in part.
Yeah. In case we were worried that there was some incest here, you know, when she says you're relatives too, right? And he doesn't answer that question. We're pretty certain that this is obviously not the case. Here he is, just a hustler basically who was rescued by Quentin, A, trying to help out this young guy, and B, of course, seeing him as an asset for the future as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that was obvious to me, but I guess there was some question about it for others. Yeah, I never really crossed my mind that this could actually be incest. But I don't watch Game of Thrones, so.
right. The turtles all the way down, incest all the way down with the Targaryens. Okay, so finally, here we are at the end of the episode. While Tanya's waiting for Niccolo to get ready, which basically is just stripping off his clothes. I'm not sure why he needed privacy for that.
but I do like how HBO just goes for it sometimes.
Oh, yes. Well, after watching the Game of Thrones shows, it's like, yeah, they don't care anymore.
Right. Like I said, I didn't watch those. So.
Oh, I mean, you haven't watched this either, I don't think, but way worse from a full frontal nudity standpoint is Euphoria. You know, there's a bunch of supposed high school students. They're not high school students, but it's like, yeah, this is pretty, pretty extreme stuff. Now, I think what the internet is going to be speculating on for the next week, Niccolo leaves to prepare, like we mentioned before. He closes the door. Tanya passes the time by just looking at these pictures, and then tucked away behind some other pictures, her only reaction here is, wow. That's all she says. Wow. She doesn't say Greg or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And she pulls up this picture. And to my eyes, this is expressly the theory everybody's been speculating on. This is a young Quentin and a young Greg. Now, I am pretty confident about this, but I understand why people would not be. I am a child of the 80s. I have seen this actor, John Grease. I've seen this actor who's been a character actor for decades, many decades. He was in Real Genius. That's how long he's been around, 40 years ago, with Val Kilmer.
And by the way, let's take a moment to talk about what a great movie Real Genius is. Yeah,
absolutely. Everybody, please watch Real Genius if you haven't.
So fantastic.
So good. There was a cycle of like nerdy people are cool movies, and that is absolutely the best one. Not the most popular box office wise, but definitely the best of them.
So great.
So anyway, I've seen this guy from when he was young, and that is basically a picture of the actor when he was young. But to that point, I went back and freeze framed it to get a better look at it, because even though I'm pretty confident immediately, I actually texted you. So I, Greg! Exclamation point.
Yes, and I wasn't watching until later. So I was like, oh no, spoilers.
I spoiled it. Oh, sorry about that. Because I was already late to the game. I started watching it late. So I figured you had already seen it, but you were watching your,
It might have been 90 Day Fiance. We don't need to talk about that right now.
That's for the year-end show, the things I'm embarrassed to admit I watch.
That's category. Right.
And so just a preview here. We're planning to have a year-end show, by the way, anybody who's still listening to this. And we want to have different categories of like the best show we covered, guilty pleasures, and we'll have some fun categories there. So stay tuned. That should be coming right around New Year. Anyway, right away, I was like, that is that actor. He's much older now, obviously. So I can understand people who are, the average age of viewership here is probably 20s or 30s. They are probably seeing just a guy in a cowboy hat. And he is much, much younger, right? It is pretty clearly him, but it is a very brief moment. It's on the screen. So I guess they can leave it ambiguous and just make it sound like, well, it's just someone who looks a lot like him. Maybe. I don't believe that, because why show that photograph multiple times? They cut back to it after she has her wow reaction. Why show it at all if it's not, important to this sequence of events? And then plus the fact that, what is the sequence of events? She's obviously being set up by someone. Jack starts to flirt with Portia immediately, like before we even meet Quentin and the rest of them. Who would have put this into motion? It has to be Greg. Who else would he know to have someone there to distract Portia? Like, this all had to be set up by somebody. And there's only one possible suspect.
The only thing is, and this kind of goes back to my other comment about how sharp is Tanya?
Right, right.
Or how much has she drank and how much cocaine has she done? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this just doesn't seem like the appropriate reaction to recognizing your husband in a photo in this random palazzo in Sicily.
Yep.
I don't question that it's him. I agree it's him, but is Tanya not putting two and two together? Is she just like, oh, what a funny coincidence. We know the same people. I don't understand.
To your point, what is weirder, absolutely, is her reaction. She doesn't say, oh my God, Greg, or oh my God, I got to get out of here. She says, wow, puts the picture back, and then hooks up with this guy. Like, that is not the reaction
exactly.
I would have.
Exactly. What is happening?
If I thought suddenly, wow, Greg knows these people, I'm suspicious of Greg already. Oh my God, I'm suspicious of people trying to take my money. I was happy by the fact that these people supposedly are rich and don't want my money. What the hell is going on here? I'm going to go back to my room and like lock the door and maybe call somebody on my phone, call like Uber or something. She's like, I'm going to hook up with Niccolo.
Right. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it is very strange. Very strange. All right. What do you think this plot is? Because I no longer think this is a murder plot, but tell me what you suspect or if you have any speculation.
Wait, you don't think this is a murder plot? What do you think it is?
I guess you don't have an alternate theory. I was wondering if they don't want to kill her. let's go back to the conversation that Jack and Portia had. She says, oh yeah, you had it so rough. You are taken care of by your uncle who's a millionaire. And Jack says, Quentin doesn't have any money. He spent it all. Like, do you see the way these people live? They spent every penny they have. All of these royals, but which, by the way, true story, there are all these royals that live all over Europe who have these titles. And by the way, the British royal family basically falls into this category. And they are supported by, in that case, tourism. But in a lot of these other cases, we were just watching a show on Netflix. It's like places you can actually book on Airbnb, and they have a palazzo in Italy where people are, coincidentally, we just watched this last week. The people who live there are still the family, and they basically are broke. They have this property and they Airbnb it for exorbitant rates, and that's how they make their living, right? Mm-hmm. So I think Quentin is in that situation. As a matter of fact, he says he doesn't want to open up the property for that type of situation. And we also saw in this very show earlier on, Daphne says this, right? That they rented out their beautiful palazzo that they went to. And she said the same thing, like, these people can't afford to maintain their property. So they rent it out, and this is how they make their livings. Quentin does not want to do that. He wants to keep it, you know, for himself. So he has to subsidize it in another way. Anyway, Jack mentions he's broke, but he's coming into some money now. And Portia's like, what do you mean? What does that mean? And that's about the time when he passes out. So we don't know.
Right.
My theory of the case is, if they kill her, how do they get the money? That doesn't make any sense, unless maybe Greg gets it from a murder, but maybe he doesn't, because maybe she's so paranoid she'd be afraid that Greg might want to kill her. But I wondered if there is a clause in their prenup about cheating. She would probably be very wary that Greg would cheat on her. So what if they put that in there, and she idiotically now feels like, Greg abandoned me, I want to get an annulment, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes and has sex with Niccolo, and now they have proof that she has sex with Niccolo. And then Greg goes, you broke our arrangement, you owe me half of your money. And of course, now he can kick back to Quentin. What do you think?
I think that's an excellent theory, but what I thought we were talking about is, why are there bodies in the water? And I thought you were telling me that you don't think
there won't be any bodies in the water at the end. Oh, that's another thing we have to talk about.
It's not a murder, so maybe people just got drunk and fell overboard. I don't know.
We need to talk about that too. Another reason that I think she's not going to die is because I think the show is going to, similarly to season one, the dead body, or bodies in this case, is going to be a surprise to the viewer. And at this point, I shouldn't say all, because there is a lot of other tension going on in this show also, but most of the arrows are pointing at her, which makes me think, like, that is the red herring, right? Because it just is the most obvious choice. So that's another meta textual read that I think makes this unlikely. But there's definitely going to be dead bodies. Okay. I want to be clear about that. I just don't think.
And do you think that will be a murder, or do you think that will be an accident?
I guess that's the last thing we should talk about, unless you wanted to expound on a theory.
No, I think your theory is excellent. I have no problem with your theory. And I also think that maybe, and again, bringing in the outside the universe of the show, it may be that Jennifer Coolidge's character is supposed to be like a unifying theme across any subsequent seasons. So they might not want to kill her off.
Exactly.
Or at least leave that option open.
If she's not the victim, then who do you think is? Do you have any theories? Who's on your death list?
The little preview showed Ethan and Cameron getting into it, right?
Yes.
Did I see that correctly?
Yep.
But then that almost seems like a little too obvious, right? That they're going to telegraph something like that. But if it's not them, okay, who are we left with? Portia and Jack maybe could get into some kind of dispute about trying to get back there and why. That could happen.
They're on my list. Yep, they're on my list.
Yeah. The DeGrasso family, I don't know. Maybe something with Albi involving Lucia and Alessio. That could happen, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I think the older two, I feel, are fairly safe.
Yeah.
Unless the one falls down again and falls overboard, which is realistically possible. Right.
They foreshadowed it again this week, by the way.
Yes. Where he's like, can you do this without falling down?
Yeah. Don't fall down before you get into the car.
Yeah. So there's that. And we know it's not Daphne. I don't feel like it's Harper.
No.
And Valentina, I feel like, is not really on that road.
We also see a scene in The Coming Attractions, using that as a clue, where I think it's the very end of The Coming Attractions, where Harper says to Ethan, so what happens to us now? And that's happening at night. So I assume that's the end of the seventh day. And this is the next episode will be the seventh day. The death occurs at the beginning of the seventh day. So I feel like, no, Harper's not. Harper may have killed somebody. Ethan may have killed Cam, maybe. But I still don't think that it's Cam, because once again, I go back to the initial reaction that Daphne has. I don't think that's her reacting to finding her husband's dead body, right? So that doesn't seem to make sense. So I think
I agree with that.
I think the foursome in general are not, I'm pretty sure it's not Tanya at this point either, for the reasons I already outlined. You already touched on the ones I think are possibilities. I think that maybe Jack and Portia. Portia keeps wanting to come back. Jack has shown himself to be impulsive. And does he like shove her in the water? Then does he jump in to try to rescue her? And then do they end up dying in that process? Something like that, I can imagine. Or just being like him being drunkenly falling off a boat if he just keeps getting wasted and he's depressed and she goes in after him as well or gets pulled in accidentally. So she's definitely on my list. And the one you said, I think still number one from the very, very beginning of the show. I unfortunately think it's going to be Lucia. And the only difference is I had originally thought it was Dom was going to do this to try to cover up the relationship she had. And now I'm starting to think that is she going to want to manipulate Albie? And then Albie's going to find out. And Albie, supposedly, she says it again here, I wish all men were like you. You're so nice. Does he end up becoming the murderer by the end of this thing? And is it like Alessio and Lucia, for example, who end up in the water? The only thing that doesn't make me think this, and this is me maybe overanalyzing once again, is that I do like the symmetry of this final image where Lucia is leaving on that ship with Albie. She's going to America and leaving Mia behind in a quid pro quo relationship, possibly with Valentina, or maybe just becoming the local girl at this resort. So, you know, I just like the dramatic symmetry of that.
Well, we're going to know in just 1 week's time.
Pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing maybe we could throw in there is, do you have predictions for what happens to these people after this? Like, obviously, everybody's lives, I think that's the point of the show, everybody's lives are going to be changed when they leave the resort. Did you have any predictions for this? Like, what happens to Ethan and Harp?
They end up in couples therapy, no doubt.
Yes. How about Cam and Daphne?
I think they're just going to go about their merry way and continue on as they have.
I completely agree. I think that, you know, even if they have a big blowout fight next week, it's like, this is par for the course for them. They just move on to the next town they go to.
Yeah. I think it's just the status quo for Daphne and Cam. Let's see, who else do we have? So the DeGrasso family, I think they all have a lot to think about.
Yes.
I think Dominic will probably continue to try and reconcile with his wife, and she will continue to want to have nothing to do with him. But maybe he can win her over. Maybe. Albie, well, let's see what happens next week.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, the grandfather will continue to just live out his golden years as he has been.
And how about Portia and Tanya?
To be determined, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's the biggest question mark at this point with everything that's happening. Do you think we're going to see Greg again?
That's a good question. Would they bring him back?
I feel like no, but he was supposed to have been back by now, wasn't he? Certainly two nights have passed.
If my theory is true, will he be there? Will he arrive at the compound to be like, gotcha, I didn't cheat on you. You cheated on me. I wonder if that's going to be part of it, which would be very sad for Tanya to have him rub it in her face.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. You know, I was thinking, are they going to kill her by, like, you know, letting her OD on cocaine or something? And then, you know, maybe Greg just inherits the wealth, you know, depending on how the prenup is set up. But I think she's so paranoid about someone killing her for her money that she would have not had him inherit it by default. That's my guess. But we see her having a breakfast with Quentin in the coming attraction. So she's not dead. Not yet. Not yet, anyway.
That's right. I was thinking that too in the scenes. Well, we know she survived the night.
Right. Exactly. And if that's the case, then, I mean, like, just imagine that too. Like, she's having breakfast. So what is she, like, fall off the side of the cliff and wash up on the beach? And how long would it take her body to float all the way to the beach? I don't think logistically.
There's no time.
you know, unless you got caught up in some riptide or something. I don't know how body moving that fast. Just one more. So exciting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Speaking of dysfunctional marriages, let's talk about this most recent episode of Fleischman is in Trouble. I have two questions for you before we break down the episode a little bit more. First of all, just to let everybody know, we will be probably breaking these conversations into two segments. The White Lotus conversation, as you noticed, can go long. It is also wrapping up next week, and we probably will have a very long conversation on that. So my plan right now is that we'll probably have an instant reaction immediately after watching the show. We will jump on a call, and then later in the week, we'll have a separate episode about Fleischman. And in that episode, we'll also have a retrospective on the season of White Lotus once we have a little more time to reflect and go on Twitter and try to steal some of those best ideas for ourselves. Like everybody
accidentally
does.
Accidentally, may I know.
Oh, I'm teasing you. I'm teasing.
Casually reading Twitter and all of a sudden.
Plus we disagree. We disagreed with the hot take anyway. So it's
that's true. It's true.
But we will kind of take some of that feedback. And of course, any of your feedback as well. If you continue to email us, we'd love
love
from
the
you.
Emails.
Need some introduction at gmail.com. Email us anytime about anything. Shows you'd like us to cover, old shows that you want to recommend, whatever it is, please drop us a line. And then we will continue to wrap up Fleischman is in Trouble, which has a few more episodes beyond there. But what I wanted to get your take on, first of all, Sona, was Fleischman is in Trouble. Of course, we assume, especially considering how the show starts off, that we're talking about Toby. Do you still think we're only talking about Toby, or is Rachel Fleischman is in Trouble also, potentially?
I feel like the point is to portray Toby's perspective.
Right.
So for that reason, I would think it refers to him. I think, yes, technically, it could refer to Rachel as well. And as we're having this conversation, I'm finding it funny that Rachel changed her name, because that seems like a very non-typical of that demographic thing to do. But we do know she changed her name. That came up earlier.
Right.
So I think it works both ways, but I think the point is for Toby to be in trouble.
Well, maybe I'm asking this question a little too early. Part of the reason I asked that question was, do you think the show, and once again, I'm saying this without knowledge of the book, do you think that the show's focus is going to be to her more so in the second half? We're literally in the middle of the season here. We have four more episodes to go. So I was wondering if you think that might be the case, only because, and here's the main reason I bring this up, if this is going to be how Claire Danes is used on the show, and she's doing excellent work here, by the way, but if this is all she's going to do, this does not seem like you get Claire Danes to play this role. Like, you have to assume the POV may shift to her later on, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a good point. I had heard that the book is largely about her, mm-hmm. or at least about her character and developing her character further. I think it would be a really interesting thing to do, to shift it to her perspective. Actually, I would love to see that.
Yeah.
And then, I could totally see the title working in both directions if that were the case.
It'll be like your affair show, right? Where you can suddenly
see the same
events from a different point of view.
I adore that. Yes.
Yes. I would love to see that too.
Fun plot device that is. Yeah.
No, we've been basically painting her with this particular brush, and she has not been completely unsympathetic, but obviously Toby is the victim here in a lot of ways. And it would be very interesting to see this the other way around.
They make so many comments about how she's kind of an absent parent to her kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it makes me bristle every time, because first of all, I think there are plenty of men who have less involvement than she seems to have with her kids that do not get that criticism. And second, we know what she's doing with her time, right? She's not out having brunch with the girls. And so she's not around for her kids because she's had one too many mimosas. She's a high powered woman running her own business. You know, she is making sure that her kids' needs and wants are taken care of. She might not be that warm, fuzzy mother that people envision. But as someone who has thought long and hard about parenthood and what it means for your life, I feel like she's very unfairly maligned, even based on the little that we have seen. I'm not saying she's the most perfect mother, mother of the year, wonderful. Right. Anybody would want her for a mother. But I don't think it's fair the level of criticism she gets with people sarcastically saying she doesn't even raise her own kids.
Right. I think that's what's interesting about the show, by the way, is exactly the point you brought up. Men traditionally on TV shows specifically, but also in the world, can be completely focused on their careers and sometimes skip you know, 5-8 years of their child's upbringing completely, which is kind of what Rachel's doing while she's building this business up. And it does not have the same kind of negative connotations. Second of all, I do find it interesting that, once again, speaking about stereotypes, that at least in this presentation of it, Jesse Eisenberg's character, Toby, it's almost like we've seen these stories before where it's the unhappy wife who's living this life of quiet desperation and alienated from her husband. So it's almost done a gender reversal on these roles.
I mean, a literal one, right? Because when he goes to see his divorce attorney, she tells him,
she literally says that. Exactly. He goes, but wait a second, she's not like that. He's like, oh no, when I said the wife, I meant you. But I think, so it's addressing that exact point. That's great that you pointed that out, because that's right in the text of the show. That's why I'm very interested to see if we have a POV shift in the second half of this, for the reason that even though Toby is like, I'm so put upon, we see that Toby is like literally out with his friends, has supposedly the whole weekend off, and all of a sudden like a liver shows up at the hospital and he drops everything and runs out. I don't think that's only happening now. I think that is his lifestyle and his perspective, of course, when he has to disappear for a couple of days because he wants to do a 24-hour vigil, that in his mind, it's just part of his job. And he doesn't feel that maybe Rachel at that period of time is home with the kids the whole entire time. This is very much a perspective that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. And we saw a flash of that the other week, right? Where she's saying, where are you? You're supposed to be home. And he says, oh, I had the surgery and, you know, whatever. And I mean, yes, if that was a one-time thing that happened, then maybe she's got a little too much attitude about it. But if this was something that was happening constantly, you could see why she would say, like, again with this.
Right.
And I'm not defending whatever's been going on since the storyline, the timeline of this show starting. Clearly, she is negligent here. Right.
Like, exactly.
She's gone missing. No one knows where she is. She bought the tickets for the show. She didn't show up.
Right.
This is all awful.
Yes.
But, you know, the comments that they're making make it seem like she has been doing this type of thing the entire time. And I don't think that's the case from what we've seen.
This specific circumstance where she just shows up at 4 o'clock in the morning, drops off the kids and disappears and will not respond to text messages, even from her daughter, is obviously not unacceptable. Now, if she had had a nervous breakdown and was in a hospital somewhere without her ID, that's one thing. But to find out she's hanging out in the park and ignoring everybody's contact with her, that is very troubling, because she could literally, you know, have been filing a missing persons report and she's just chilling in the park. So obviously this particular circumstance is absolutely horrible.
I totally agree.
But we don't know what led up to it is the point. Right. And I'm very curious to see that fleshed out in more detail. Speaking of that, before we get into details of this specific middle episode, which I think is a very much a middle episode. It's not very plot heavy at all, which makes perfect sense. We're in the middle of the season. I have loved every one of these episodes, and I'm only asking you this just to get a temperature from you of what you feel about this. Unless there's like a POV pivot in the show, which may be the case, do you think 8 episodes is too many episodes to tell this story? Not that I felt it so far, but do you think 4 more episodes of this specific moment we're in would be too long? What do you think?
Yes, I do.
That would be my only concern, I would say, at this point. But I could be completely wrong about that, right? This show could be folding in half and now we go in a different direction.
Right. Yeah, this was definitely my least favorite so far, but I still liked it quite a bit. Just if I had to rank them, this would be last.
Yep, I agree.
Yes, I think we need some kind of forward direction, either on Rachel resurfacing, changing the perspective to Rachel, whatever it may be. Something has got to move beyond Rachel is MIA and why. We need to get some answers, or we need to get some sort of shift.
I have complete confidence in the show that they are going to give us something else.
Yeah.
I'm just raising it as a question mark. But I have a feeling, honestly, that this has been so well paced and everything has been so purposeful that we are spending this time, even this episode, completely agree, very entertaining. I laughed a lot. It became much funnier than it has, like last week's episode, which was very sad in a lot of ways.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Compared to this week's episode. And we get to flesh out Lizzie Kaplan's suburban life. And it also allows us to now explore this dichotomy, the Rachel trajectory of someone's career, the Lizzie Kaplan playing Libby trajectory of her career. By the way, her husband here, the actor from How I Met Your Mother.
Yep.
Seems like that's a pretty small role for him. Maybe he'll have a meatier part because he's really just like in the background in a couple of scenes. But maybe there's more for him to do as well. But anyway, Libby has this alternate trajectory of her life. And we do spend some time fleshing it out here. And we also get to see what I dread every day, by the way, this interaction with her teenage daughter.
Yes.
something I'm not looking forward to. And we have two, you know, difficult two difficult preteen girls here. What'd you think about this episode, regardless of, you know, where it fits into the plot, fleshing out Libby's character here?
I like that a lot, especially because, I mean, this is something that I can really relate to, right? In that we grew up in suburban New Jersey. I moved to the city, decided not to come back, but a lot of people we know either came back or never left. And so there is this like very present in my mind always, this alternate version of my life that could have existed, where I just came to the city to go to school and then moved back to suburban New Jersey,
right.
Lived in a lovely house with a nice backyard. And we went to the community pool or the country club pool, wherever they may be. On a personal level, it's very fascinating to me because I feel like there is always that parallel version of a life I could have led. I do think there's going to be more from this Libby character, although if we're going to shift perspectives, I'm not sure how that would work. I think she has a lot to say about that lifestyle and how she feels about it, that either she has not acknowledged to herself yet or she has never said out loud yet. I'm looking forward to that. I think it's a nice dichotomy between that urban city professional to professional parent lifestyle and the suburban stay-at-home mom lifestyle. It's a very present contrast in what that means for your lifestyle, for your relationship, all of those things, for the education you had that you don't feel like you're using maybe.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that being developed more.
Yeah. I think the way that they get to develop her character is that, of course, she narrates, and I assume she would narrate everybody's. I assume this is an article she's writing, or this novel potentially that she's writing as the narrator and observing all these other lives around her. But you get her point of view in there as well.
Yes.
But maybe she will have an episode where she is more central to the plot. And I love her character. I mean, I love all this, by the way. All of it's just really a separate topic, by the way. What did you think about Seth coming forward and admitting that he might be losing his job and everything because this investment firm he's in has got caught up in some Me Too scandal or something? It actually made me think, like, does he work at the same investment firm as Cam?
Maybe that's what's happening in White Lotus.
Exactly.
It all makes sense.
There might be an intersection here between the two shows. They might be the same universe.
And I think it's an interesting spin on what's happening with his fun single friend who lives the life, right? That is supposed to be no worries and all fun and none of this baggage that Toby's having to deal with. So I thought it was an interesting contrast to what the reality of that might be. Right. I like the idea of Toby flipping out with his toaster, his emotional support toaster that he's bringing everywhere. And, you know, spending part of the time with the fun single friend and what could have been that type of life. And then the other part of his time being spent with the suburban family and that could have been.
Yep.
Although I question why you're in such a painful situation with your own family, why you would go spend time with a theoretically happy family. I'm not sure why you would do that to yourself. Nonetheless, I thought it was nice the way he covered kind of all the, not all, but some alternate versions of the life he could be living.
Interesting to see this in parallel, once again, by coincidence or by design, with White Lotus. A scene I forgot to mention completely in last week's episode, when Dom is walking on the beach and seeing all of these couples, like it's almost going back to that whole block universe version of life. He's walking on the beach and he sees a young family with their kids. He sees a young couple walking hand in hand. He sees an old couple sitting on the beach by themselves. And of course, he tries to talk to Abby almost immediately after that in a scene near that. And of course, he's also talked to Albie about how he wants to fix this, the relationship with his family. And it does make you wonder, similarly to like how we see all these parallel versions of Toby's life, he wants Rachel back. And he wants to be having this crazy hookups on his apps lifestyle. And he looks at Seth, who's carefree and rich and, you know, has a new girlfriend, although he seems to have a pretty stable girlfriend at this moment in the show, but has kind of had this other lifestyle. I think that's what we all do, right? You always kind of look at other people around you and you kind of judge. Of course, none of these scenarios is perfect for anybody. Everybody who's in those scenarios have their own compromises, which I think is what White Lotus is exploring as well. That you would on the surface say, here's a bunch of rich people who have no problems. And then inside those dynamics, it's like, no, all of this has its own issues as well. Right. So I think it's interesting to see these two shows on at the same time, kind of like paralleling their themes as well.
And he sees too, right? It's in front of him that like none of this is perfect because Seth is saying, hey, I have this job security issues, financial
right.
issue
right.
because of all of this. He gets to the other house and they're all bickering at each other. And,
right.
I mean, why Libby would not tell her husband that Toby was going to show up, I have no idea. I think Josh Radnor's character rolled with that way better than a lot of other people would if your wife's high school classmate just shows up at the yep. house. It's clear that nobody has it perfectly right. And so there's always a downside.
Let's just talk about some of those interactions. I did like Libby's observation. You know, going to the pool, I have that experience of going to the pool as well and running into the same moms that yes. You know, I run into all the time. I like the generic bathing suit that all women yes. have to wear, which is true. It's all the same bathing suit.
Yeah.
Maybe my favorite thing is, like you said, Toby just shows up and they're so true of character dynamics. There's all this chaos going on in the house. They're just continuing this conversation, completely oblivious to it. Or, you know, they just take yes. little pauses to have these little interstitial dramas. But other than that, they're just kind of keep going with the flow. And like you mentioned, Josh Ratner's character walking in and keeps asking her, like, what are you doing? Because he's trying yes. to get all the kids out.
She waves that bottle around.
She's doing the bottle. She's washing the bottles. You got to wash the bottles for the outing, of course. We've all been there. We've all been there.
So. Yes, while all the chaos goes on around you.
Exactly.
And the comment of, you know, I really enjoyed hanging out with you guys again.
And yeah.
Josh Radnor is like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
I haven't been there.
That what he hints at there that we have not seen, because we've seen Libby's character being pretty confident in her decisions and in her lifestyle, etc., is that he's mentioning that maybe she was depressed or something, that he actually thanks Toby for the trip, not because it got in the way of their family outing, but because she seems really invested in this mm-hmm. drama that he's in right mm-hmm. now. And apparently she's been pretty out of it recently. She's been more, you know, animated because of your drama.
Yes.
Vicariously living through their little drama, which of course is what we're doing watching this show too.
Exactly.
Was there anything else from the episode you wanted to call out specifically?
If I were him, I think I would just sit in that empty apartment until this lady shows up. I don't, right, yeah. practically speaking, I don't understand what's going on here. I am enjoying yeah. so much of the story and what's going on. But as far as the mother of your kids being missing,
right,
I don't think, practically speaking, this is how a person would deal with it.
Don't you think he's torn, though? And I have another thing I just remembered that I wanted to mention to you. But don't you think he's torn in the fact that he's playing this out like she's just doing this to get my goat? For him to get to the end of this and find out she just was being flaky and didn't want to talk to him because she was in the middle of having fun, makes him want to like hang out with his friends and go on hookups and stuff, because he's like, I'm not going to be the one who's stuck at home all the time, right? So don't you think there's some aspect to that dynamic there?
Possibly, but I think it disregards the fact that there are two kids.
Oh, yes.
If this was just a married couple divorcing,
well, he set
yes,
them away, right? He set them out.
But yeah, he had to, right? What else right. was he going to do? So, well, the one was going to camp anyway. He right. just had to sell the son on going. But because of that, I think there would just be a little bit more urgency to resolving where have you been and what is your plan? But I right. mean, yes, they've bought themselves, sometime. I don't know, is this a 2-week camp, a 4-week camp?
Right.
Sometime at least before they really have to deal with the practicalities of that. But it just seems something like you would want to know sooner rather than later. So, yeah. So that part of it, I'm not quite keeping up with the decision-making, but that's okay, because that's not really the point.
Right. The one thing I wanted to bring up that I totally forgot to bring up is that when he, of course, goes via his, you know, or during his sleuthing, he has the keys to the house, which makes sense because, you know, sometimes you got to go get the kids. You have to put them yeah. in the house. You know, you sure. need to have keys. So he has the keys to the original apartment. I like the fact that the doorman, every time he sees him, even if he's yes. a long time no see, which at first you're like, oh, that's legit because he hasn't been here.
Yes.
And then he just says it like he's 5 minutes later, long time no see.
Yeah.
He's like, no, he just says that to everybody.
Yeah.
But the more importantly is he starts snooping around the apartment. He's looking for confirmation that he's with, who's this guy? This character. I can't find that. So I'm just going to say that
yeah,
she's having this.
Goldberg. I'm just not sure. I could be making that up.
But that, oh, and I should talk about the title for a minute too. But anyway, that we have confirmation now, right? That the guy's medicine is in her cabinet, right? There's really no other way to read that. Would you agree? If this was like a murder mystery or something, you could imagine them trying to put that in as a red herring. Like she borrowed his yes. Ambien or something. But that doesn't seem to be this type of show, right?
If there were no other clues, then perhaps. But with the beef lo mein, the three giant containers of beef lo mein.
Of course. Yes, of course.
That was very strange. Who eats that much beef lo mein? I don't know. I mean, the one container is more than enough for two people. But so, you know, they had left a few other markers of the idea that she either has changed who she is radically or there's somebody else involved.
There might not be much to explore here in the title, but the title of this episode was God, What an Idiot He Was, which he actually sees appear in a crossword puzzle at one point while he's trying to fill it in.
Not that I think there's anything more to it, but I think it's that question of, well, how long has this been going on? Right?
Exactly, right.
You know, he had been seeing their relationship through one lens, but maybe I'm talking about alternate universes all the time lately now, but maybe there is this alternate version of reality where actually she's been having an affair with this guy for 6 months or a year or whatever, since she said that he was her free pass.
Right.
Who knows? So I think it's interesting. And he says as much, I think, to Libby, saying, you know, I had been so sure about what was going on and about who she is. And now I have to reevaluate all of that all of a sudden. And that does kind of throw you when you think you know so well what a situation is. And then you realize, oh, maybe I missed it all along.
I agree with everything you said. And of course, we all would, right? You'd all have that feeling that, and it doesn't matter, right? Because you could imagine saying, like, if they are together now, were they together before? And then you could also say, was there like an emotional affair? Like, let's say she would come back and say, no, we didn't do, you know, we didn't, weren't, you know, physical with each other until afterwards. We were planning for it the whole entire time. It still is a betrayal in its own way, right? So of course, this is all weighing heavily on him.
Yeah, and this is clearly a guy who thinks of himself as very perceptive, right?
Yes,
So it would be even more insulting that, you know, he thinks he knows people very well. He thinks he understands her very well. And maybe he was wrong about a decent chunk of it, if not all of it.
One more thing I wanted to ask, I just remembered, is as retaliation in his own mind, he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go hook up with this woman who lives nearby that he's had some,
yeah.
I don't know if they've had a physical affair, if it's just been virtual until now, but regardless, he goes and shows up with her. What do you think it says about his character that he not only is going to say, I'm going to get revenge and hook up with this woman, but then he wants to like hang out with her. And she's like, I don't date, you know, like we can hang out here, but I don't want to do that whole thing and whatever. Right. And she doesn't want to, she doesn't even want to explain what her current circumstance is. She's just like saying, we're just doing this and that's it. A, what did you think about his retaliatory attack in doing something that, of course, Rachel would not even know about, but I guess it makes him feel better. Mm-hmm. But then also, what do you think it says about this woman who basically is saying, like, I don't date anymore. I don't do that anymore.
Well, it was very funny to me the way she presented it of like, I don't go out for breakfast.
Yeah. Just we can order in. We can order in, but that's it.
People are very weird and everybody has their things that the first time you encounter them, you're kind of just like, I'm sorry, you do what now? So, you know, some people hide them more, some people don't. So regardless of her motivation, even if she was just a person who doesn't like to go out to breakfast, I think I would kind of think like, well, that's her, you know, people are weird, especially in New York City. The whole episode, right? He's like trying to find ways to make himself feel better and just hitting a dead end everywhere he goes.
Right.
Even with the liver patient, right? That he tried to create this image of her where she's so noble and deserving of this liver and not a woman who went out for a bachelorette party to this strip show or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it kind of is in keeping with that theme of, you know, he just keeps trying to find something that works and he's hitting a dead end everywhere he turns.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I wonder if that's some foreshadowing, something he's saying, something about his character as well. He was interacting with this version of Rachel that he, and I guess we all do this, right? I mean, in the end, we all live inside our heads, right? So we're interacting with the version of in our minds. And like you said, he had this need to maybe overly idolize Rachel and miss some of the red flags that would be issues in their relationship, and vice versa. When some of those things emerged, disrupted his fantasy of her, that now he's vilifying her to an extent when she's just the same all the time. Like this is all kind of his impressions of it. And maybe he is guilty of like that liver patient, I think it's very important that you brought that up, that he also had this kind of idealized version of who she was. And so what if she goes and parties in Vegas with her friends? But somehow that doesn't cut mustard. He wanted her, he needed her to be this ideal patient to make him feel better about the circumstances in his life right now, that he's dedicating his time, you know, putting everything on hold to come see this patient because in his mind, she is this idealized mother to her children, who Rachel is not. And now, of course, this is dampening his enthusiasm because now he finds out she's a regular person like everybody else, right?
Exactly.
Which, of course, we all are in the end. We just do the best we can.
Yes. And I also noted that the show met its quota of at least one joke about, or not one joke, but one comment saying, oh, that's nice for you that you're a doctor.
Yes, yes, exactly.
With Seth's date. It was Seth's date.
Oh, yes, yes. Right, right, right. Yeah. So I am very excited to see what happens next. And we'll be talking about it later this week.
Yes. Can't wait.
All right. And of course, next week, everybody, the finale of White Lotus, which I'm very, very excited for also. I can't wait to see how that turns out.
Absolutely.
Who are those dead bodies? Can't wait to find out. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.